Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Dark Matters Radio. My name is Don Ecker. I am your host, and tonight I can promise you an absolutely fascinating journey into the unknown. I have joining me a gentleman that I met, figuratively speaking, a number of years ago on another radio show that I did, but I was aware of him and his co-author for many years. Now, before I tell you who that is, let me give you a very brief little breakdown. Back in the 1990s, in the early 1990s, my wife and I were publishing UFO magazine. Often we would receive notices on new books coming out, not only impacting into that arena, but a lot of surrounding arenas. I heard of a new book back about 1993, 1994 that absolutely captured my imagination. The name of the book? Forbidden Archaeology. The authors, Mr. Michael Cremo and Dr. Richard Thompson. Now, the premise of the book was mind-boggling. What if everything that we've learned in school about the history of the human race was out of kilter, was somewhat wrong? And I'm not talking necessarily about the idea of creationism as opposed to Darwin. I'm talking about actual human artifacts and remains literally going back millions of years into our past. Does that sound fantastic? Well, let me tell you, the book made such an impact that back in the 90s, NBC TV, and I'm talking about the national network, did a special that ran that ignited the scientific community all around the world. The name of that special? The Mysterious Origins of Man, and it was based totally on Mr. Cremo and Dr. Thompson's book, Forbidden Archaeology. Now, with that said, let's get on with the show. Joining me now from Southern California is Mr. Michael Cremo. And Michael, thank you so much for joining us here on Dark Matters Radio.
Oh, it's really great to be with you and all your listeners.
Great. Now, Michael, let's get to the crux of the matter. Forbidden Archaeology. Now, I have my copy that, incidentally, I purchased. I didn't get a reviewer's copy. I went out, this thing grabbed me, I bought it, and I read it, and it literally blew me away. Now, this had to be a daunting task on your part and Dr. Thompson's part. What exactly was it that initially excited you about attempting something this massive? And this was a massive project, was it not?
Yes, it was. What got us started on it was our encounter with the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. Among these ancient writings is a group called the Puranas. They're histories. And in these histories, we find mention of human civilizations, a human presence that goes back many millions of years on Earth, right back to the very beginnings of the history of life on Earth. And we thought, well, if there's any truth to what these ancient writings tell us, then there should be some kind of physical evidence to support it. So I started the research for this book in 1984, and when I started the research, I thought I might do about 8 weeks of research, find a few interesting facts, and then go on to something else. But those 8 weeks of research turned into 8 months, and then the 8 months turned into 8 years, because as I got deeper and deeper into the subject, I found more and more evidence for extreme human antiquity. Now, when I first looked in the usual textbooks of archaeology and anthropology, I didn't find any such evidence, but I decided, well, let's look a little bit deeper. Let's not just look at the textbooks. Let's go back to the original scientific reports by archaeologists from the time of, say, Darwin up to the present. And when I did that, I was really amazed. I began finding reports in scientific literature written by professional archaeologists and anthropologists and other earth scientists who, in their work, had uncovered human bones, human footprints, and human artifacts many, many billions of years old.
Now, wait a minute. Let me stop you there. Basically, what you are suggesting, and I have no doubt that this, what I'm about to say, is correct, but what you are suggesting to the audience is that there has been a, well, scientific conspiracy of silence. Would I be out of line by suggesting that?
I think you're on the right track there. I had to wonder myself, why is it that these reports are there in the original scientific literature, but they're not mentioned in the current textbooks? To me, that was very amazing. That was the most amazing thing. The first amazing thing was that these reports are there, that there actually have been discoveries of human bones, human footprints, and human artifacts going back many millions of years. That in itself is pretty astonishing.
Now, wait a minute. There is one case that immediately comes to my mind. I am absolutely certain that you will be aware of it, where down in Texas, and I don't recall the exact location, footprints, human-appearing footprints, wearing what is believed to be sandals, were found in the same strata with footprints of dinosaurs.
Yes, that's a case. That's the case from Glen Rose, Texas, on the Paluxy River. Now, at the time I was doing my research, I was aware of those discoveries where a researcher, actually a Christian creationist researcher named Dr. Henry Morris Jr., had reported these human footprints being found next to dinosaur tracks at that location. At the time, I looked into that case very carefully, and I found that after some time, Dr. Henry Morris had withdrawn his claims about those particular footprints. He decided that really what had happened is that there had been some dinosaur footprints that had been eroded so that they looked like human footprints. So in a letter in Nature, which is a very authoritative scientific journal, he withdrew his claims. Now, I thought at that time that because the original person who had made the claims had decided that he was wrong, that it was a case that I really couldn't rely on. So I didn't put that case into my book, Forbidden Archaeology. I put it in what I call a holding file, where I would need to have more information before I could really put a lot of credibility and trust in a case like that, where the original discoverer had withdrawn his claims. So what happened later, after Forbidden Archaeology came out, people started writing me letters. And one person who wrote me a letter was an archaeology student at a university in Texas. Happened to be a lady. So she asked, is there anything I can do to help with your research? And I asked her to go to that site, you know, that Paluxy River site in Texas, and have a look at those footprints herself as an archaeologist, and then tell me what she thought of them. So she went there, and she met Dr. Carl Baugh and some of the other researchers that were up in that area, and she participated in some new excavations where new footprints were uncovered.
You mean they found more?
Yes, more. And she examined those footprints, and she sent me photographs of them, and she said as far as she could see, they were just like modern human footprints.
Now they were
that
wearing
was her opinion as an archaeology and anthropology student.
They were wearing some type of footwear. Is that correct?
Well, that is the footwear. There's another case that involved footwear. It wasn't this particular case. There was a case from the 1960s from Antelope Springs, Utah, where a gentleman, a rock collector, had been going out at that place, and he had been going through pieces of shale, which is a rock that kind of breaks like the pages of a book, you could say. If you whack it, the layers will separate, just sort of like the pages of a book. And he was looking at fossils, and he found, when he broke open one piece of slate, he found a shoe print inside. And it was, the print was shaped exactly like a modern human shoe or sandal print. It had a definite heel to it. And you could see that the heel was worn down in the exact place that it should be. Like if you look at the bottom of your shoe, you'll see that the heel is worn down in a certain place. So it had all these features. And actually, Richard Thompson, my co-author, went and visited this man and who was living in Utah at that time. And he still had the piece of rock with the footprint in it. And Richard was able to photograph it, and we did a computer analysis of the shoe print, comparing it to modern human shoe prints, and it had the exact same shape and form. So what was interesting about that case was that the shoe print, which had been found by this gentleman named William Meister, he found it in layers of rock about 600 million years old, and that can be verified not only by the geology but by the presence of fossils in the rock characteristic of the early Cambrian.
Okay, you're talking about something that is so mind-boggling it's almost beyond the pale. You're talking about literally hundreds of millions of years. Now,
yes, there are discoveries that go that far back in time.
I'm going to throw you a curveball. Okay?
Okay.
This is going to sound like it came right out of a science fiction movie, but have you ever considered the possibility that perhaps at some point in all of human history, and I'm not just talking about the past, I'm talking also about the future, that there are humans that may have developed a way to warp space-time and actually travel into the past, and perhaps some of these discoveries might actually be from future humans. Now, I realize, Michael, that sounds pretty crazy, but we're talking about a subject that on the surface sounds crazy, and I'm interested in...
I think your suggestion is a perfectly valid one. I wouldn't call it crazy at all. Now, my method in forbidden archaeology was just to put the factual evidence in the book, put it on the table, and I deliberately did not offer any kinds of explanations for the evidence. Other than to suggest that certainly does something quite different than what we're being told now, you know, about human antiquity. That's obvious. Because in the textbooks today, you know, they say humans like us came into existence between 100 and 200,000 years ago, and before that, there were no humans like us.
Right, right.
So this evidence definitely contradicts that idea. But other than that, I deliberately made no attempt to explain the evidence because I wanted people to be free to think about it on their own and come up with their own explanations, whatever they might be, for this very unusual evidence.
Okay, now...
I began writing letters, and one of the ideas that came up that several people have written to me about is this idea of time travelers. Others have mentioned extraterrestrials coming from other places in the cosmos. Others have proposed theories of evolution that involve humans evolving far earlier than most scientists now think possible today, and so on and so on. And I think that's healthy. I think we've got to consider all the possible explanations. And what I decided to do was put my own explanation in some other book and let people be free to think about this themselves.
I would absolutely agree with you. Now, we're getting up, but we got about a minute and a half roughly before we have to go to break. Now, first off, let me give this to the audience. To find out more about Mr. Cremo, about his book, Forbidden Archaeology, also his new book, Human De-Evolution, and I guess, actually, in the scheme of things, your new book is not that new. It's been out a while.
It's been out a couple of years, yes.
A couple of years, but these will absolutely change the way you view the universe. Go to www.forbiddenarchaeology.com. Or, by contrast, put in Mr. Cremo's name, Michael Cremo, C-R-E-M-O, into Google or one of the other search engines, and they will also take you up to www.forbiddenarchaeology.com. Michael, we are almost at the break time, so I want you to think about this while we're going to break. In your book, Forbidden Archaeology, one of the things that absolutely blew my mind then, it's still blowing my mind today, are metallic spheres found in Precambrian rock dating back 2.8 billion years ago. I'd like to pick up on that when we come back from break, okay?
Right.
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Dark Matters Radio. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back to this special edition of Dark Matters Radio with my very special guest, Mr. Michael Cremo, author of the best-selling and scientifically astounding Forbidden Archaeology. Michael, before we went to break, I asked you about a case of some absolutely mind-boggling objects discovered in South Africa a number of years ago that have been dated to have been found in Precambrian rock approximately 2.8 billion, that's with a B, billion years ago. Now, these objects, and of course, I've only seen the photos in your book, Forbidden Archaeology, but these objects beggar description. They have every appearance in the world of being manufactured. What can you tell me about that?
Well, these round objects, they're a couple inches, 1 or 2 inches in diameter. They were found by miners in South Africa at a place called Otosdal in the western Transvaal region. They're made of a naturally occurring type of iron called hematite. And hematite is considered to be a semi-precious stone. You can find jewelry in stores today made of hematite. And they're very interesting objects. The most interesting feature is the parallel grooves that go around the center of each of these objects. Some of them have three grooves, some of them have two, some have just one. That is the most interesting feature. Now, these objects were shown on that NBC television special that you mentioned earlier in the show, The Mysterious Origins of Man. But before they could be shown on television, the network said they had to be given to an independent company of metallurgists. And when the metallurgists examined them, they determined that they could give no explanation how these things could have formed naturally in the layers of the Earth. In other words, that means they had to have been made by someone with human-like intelligence. But as you mentioned, they're found solidly embedded in layers of rock about 2.8 billion years old from the early Precambrian period. So That is really astonishing. I had in my possession for some time one of these objects.
You did?
And I was actually, I was invited to give a talk at a meeting of MUFON, you know, the Mutual UFO Network in New Hampshire. And some of the engineers who are members of MUFON asked if they could have the sample. And I gave it to them, and they reported some interesting things. One of them measured the diameter of the sample. It was cut in half, and if you go to the center of the half and measure out to the edge, this engineer found that the diameter didn't vary by any more than 1/4,000th of an inch.
Now, wait a minute. You're telling me that they cut this object in two?
Yes. I gave them permission to do that.
And what was, okay, what was inside the object? Was it solid,
solid hematite sphere. That's what it turned out to be. There wasn't anything inside of it, really. It just appeared to be a solid hematite sphere. But the interesting feature was that it was almost perfectly circular. And to get something to that tolerance, you know, that the diameter varied less than 1/4,000th of an inch all the way around, kind of shows they must have had some kind of very highly advanced machining abilities at that time to get something with a circular surface like that. That didn't vary very much.
Now, over the years, I'm sure that probably this particular discovery, at least in my mind, would have been, although there are many astounding objects that have been discovered in forbidden archaeology, this particular 2.8 billion year old thing, I would think that most engineers, scientists, archaeologists would find that one thing to be the most interesting. Perhaps I'm wrong. I find it the most interesting. But my question is, has anyone suggested to you what the purpose of this might be?
There have been some suggestions that people have made. Some have suggested that perhaps they were musket balls. I'm not saying that I agree with that, but that's one suggestion. A person showed me that, you know, in the 18th century, musket balls kind of looked like that. They were round and they had these grooves on them. So that was one suggestion. Another person sent me a picture of some spent uranium, from nuclear reactors, and it's disposed of. And this one person had sent me some photographs of spherical pieces of uranium.
But that turns to lead, does it not, with enough time?
Yeah, it does. But it was the spent uranium. Personally, when I look at them, they appear to me to be perhaps game pieces or something like that. But I really don't know. I really can't tell you with any certainty what they were used for or manufactured.
Oh, of course. I mean, I realize
that. We can only speculate about that. I was just kind of giving some examples of some of the suggestions that people who have read about them in the book have suggested to me in their correspondence with me. For me, the main thing is that up to the present moment, no one has been able to offer an explanation how they could have formed naturally within the layers of the earth, including the grooves. Now, some people, geologists and others who are a bit skeptical, have told me that they think, the hematite spheres could possibly have formed naturally in the layers of the earth.
And with the grooves.
Which is possible, because there are examples of spherical inclusions called concretions that have been found in various parts of the world. So I'm prepared to admit that you could get in layers of sedimentary rock concretions or inclusions that are spherical in shape. That can happen. But the real question is the groove. So now some of these geologists have suggested that, well, perhaps the spheres, the hematite spheres, were naturally in the rock, but then somebody took them out and then engraved, you know, in later times, in recent times, the grooves that go around. Well, I visited South Africa and I met the chief mining engineer from the mine where these objects come from. Now, at the time I was in South Africa, the mine itself was closed, so it wasn't possible to go into the mine itself. But the chief mining engineer showed me a solid block of mineral taken from the interior of the mine. This is a huge piece of rock. And in the rock, you could see embedded these round hematite spheres. Some of them were partially, you know, protruding from the solid rock. And you could see that they all had the grooves on them going, you know, and you could see how the grooves would go along the surface of the sphere and then right back into the solid rock, you know, where the rest of the object was covered.
Roughly how many of these have been discovered?
I would say hundreds of them. And it's interesting, the one that was pictured in the book Forbidden Archaeology, which has three parallel grooves going around, it's really an amazing specimen. That comes from a museum of natural history in the town of Klerksdorp in South Africa. And after the book Forbidden Archaeology came out, a television producer from Europe, from Amsterdam, got in touch with me. He said, well, where exactly is that thing now? Because I would like to go down and shoot it for television. So we put him in touch with Rolf Marx, who was the director of the museum. But he informed us, the director of the museum informed us, that that particular object had been stolen from the museum.
Oh, really?
And that sometimes happens with some of these discoveries.
Well, now, we're getting up to another break, but let me ask you this, because I would like to cover this when we come back. Now, if we're talking about actual manufactured objects from 2.8 billion years ago, Michael, we're talking about a civilization that had to have manufacturing processes. Okay? Now, this is the only thing that makes sense to me. How long would it take for basically all traces of a civilization to basically disappear? And we're going to have to stop right here. We'll be back with my guest, Mr. Michael Cremo, in just a moment. Hey, keep tuned in. We are back with my guest, Mr. Michael Cremo. Tonight's topic, Forbidden Archaeology. We're talking about the hidden history, or what may be the hidden history, of the entire human race. Michael, before we had to go to break, I had suggested that if these spheres that we were discussing from 2.8 billion year old pre-Cambrian rock were manufactured, that would obviously, that would mean that there had to be a human civilization with manufacturing processes at some point. Now, as astounding as that seems, what else could it be if these are not natural and they don't appear to be natural? What could have happened to that civilization, and is it conceivable that there would be basically no traces of it left?
It is conceivable that as we go further back in time, there would be less and less evidence of a human presence. You know, I saw an interesting study that was done by a group of environmental scientists. The report about it was published in the Times of London. And these environmental scientists were raising the question, what if right now the human species went out of existence? what would happen to the remains of our civilization? You can see we've got a huge worldwide technological civilization existing right now. So their question was, what if all the human beings just disappeared? What would happen to the physical remains of our civilization over time? And they explained what would happen, because we tend to think that the products of our civilization are very...
permanent.
Permanent, yeah. But here's what they explained would happen, that over time, gradually all the buildings would collapse because of earthquakes, storms, rivers overflowing. Many of our cities, for example, are on the shores of oceans or on rivers. And those rivers, most of them are dammed, and they're controlled by levees and things like that. But over the course of time, when you have earthquakes and things like that, those dams will collapse.
Well, we are seeing exactly the same thing right at this moment in China.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's hard for us to imagine how fragile our civilization actually is if you actually look at it. So then you would have those rivers just flowing wherever they want, washing through things, washing things out into the ocean, and actually concrete deteriorates quite rapidly. You'd have the plants growing over all the cities, and then, of course, all the metals, except those like gold that don't oxidize, will oxidize. You know, metals will oxidize, which means they'll rust away. Except for gold, for example. That's one reason we consider gold very valuable, because it doesn't oxidize like most other metals do. So they propose that by the time you get back to after a few hundred thousand years had gone by, practically you would see nothing left. Of course, things will get preserved, but most things will disappear. Because of the action of these natural forces, the fact that metals corrode, the fact that wooden objects will decay, the fact that concrete will gradually begin to rot over the course of many thousands of years, so that there wouldn't be as much left as you would expect. There will be some things. But then another thing we have to consider is that over the course of many, many millions of years, the layers of rock in which you would find this kind of evidence get eroded away. Geologists tell us that about 95% of all the layers of rock that have ever been deposited on Earth since the beginning of the history of life on Earth have been eroded away. You know, it's as if you had a book of 1,000 pages, and all you've got left of the 1,000 pages is 50 pages, and say it's written in a foreign language and ripped into, you know, hundreds of pieces, and you know, you find parts of it, and then you try to figure out what the whole book said just on the basis of those few fragments.
Well, you know, Michael, yeah. when I was in college, my major was history. And I have always had a deep and very abiding love of history. Now, I have followed anthropologists and archaeologists here in North America, often looking with some amusement on the raging controversies that have exploded between these folks over how long human habitation has actually been in this geographical region. And I'm sure you followed that also.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And now, I just recently, about a week, perhaps a week and a half ago, read about some ancient human excrement that had been discovered in a cave that, if in fact proves to be genuine, and there's no indication that it's not, that the human habitation in North America has got to be pushed back thousands of years from what was originally believed. Now, the reason I find this so amusing Originally, I am from the East Coast. My home state was in Pennsylvania, but I've lived across the United States. And while I was residing in the state of Idaho, I heard about something called the Nampa Image, which is a small humanoid, I don't know, what would you call it?
A statuette.
It's
exactly like a small human female figurine.
That was found literally hundreds of feet in a well drilling.
It's 300 feet, actually.
Well, that's quite that's quite deep. And that would seem to indicate that human beings were here, what, hundreds of thousands of years ago?
Well, I've wrote about that case in Forbidden Archaeology, and when you look at the drilling record, you'll see that the well passed through, of course, the surface layers. Then it went through about 100 feet of solid lava, you know, basalt lava, and then it penetrated into other sedimentary layers. And it was, when they got down to around 300 feet, you know, the well started bringing up some objects, one of which was this small human figurine. Now, we consulted with geologists of the United States Geological Survey, and we asked them, well, how old is the formation at 300 feet at this particular location near Nampa, Idaho? That's the name of the town near which this object was found. And they told us that the layers at that level belong to a formation about 2 million years old. So, yes, I think in that Nampa Image case, we have evidence that humans capable of artwork were present about 2 million years ago in North America. And I have in my hand a report that I've just received yesterday. It tells of the discovery of anatomically modern human footprints in Bolivia near Lake Titicaca. And according to the discoverers, and this was announced at a government ministry in Bolivia, according to the discoverers, the footprint was found in layers of rock 15 million years old.
15 million years old.
But this is consistent with other discoveries from North America. For example, there's the California gold mines case, where during the gold rush days, miners were digging tunnels into the sides of mountains at places like Table Mountain and the Sierra Nevada Mountains in California.
Yes. That was an area, actually, that I wanted to touch upon.
Yes. Well, deep inside those tunnels, the miners were finding human skeletons and human artifacts and layers of rock that modern geologists consider to be about 50 million years old.
Now, how is that possible, Michael?
Well, for me, that's just what the facts say, and I find it quite possible that human beings were existing 50 million years ago.
Well, I'm not disputing that, but okay, here's where I want to touch upon something. When The Mysterious Origins of Man aired on NBC. In the aftermath of that, I followed the controversy very closely.
So did I.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. And I was, well, I can't really say I was amazed at the vitriol that came out of the mainstream scientific community. But how do these folks explain these anomalies, where it's obvious the anomalies are there? The first thing, of course, that everyone looks for, is this a hoax? Is this, you know, somebody's idea of a major joke to try to pull on the scientific community? And when these artifacts are discovered to be legitimate, how do they explain that? And why are they unable to open their mind to consider other possibilities?
Well, here the usual way that they try to explain these things away is by giving a big list of possibilities, how there could have been a hoax, how there could have been a mistake, how there could have been some earth movements.
Prove a negative, in other words.
Right. In other words, of course, you could do that with any discovery. You know, even the ones that support their theories would be open to the all those same possibilities. But that's not scientific. You know, to raise, it's all right if you want to raise a possibility, but then scientifically, I think you'd have to show that in a particular case, well, there was a fissure through which the object fell down. There was a man who was hoaxing things, and he was admittedly responsible for this particular hoax, or that there was an earth movement in this place that actually was. You can't just suggest these things as possibilities, because you could do that with any discovery.
Well, you know, this is what I experienced so often in the UFO arena. Now,
I think that's one reason why I got invited to so many UFO conferences after that book came out.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
The common element is this, what I call knowledge filtering process that operates in the UFO field, but also in the archaeology field.
Well, Michael, in my previous life, and I'm talking about this life, but before I became a researcher, writer, and what have you, I was a police officer and a criminal investigator. I was a detective. And I medically retired in 1986. But when I became consciously involved in researching these things, in other words, I decided that's what I want to do. I decided to treat it like I would have treated any other criminal case, to go strictly for the facts. Now, if you find the facts and the facts are irrefutable, then you have to, by the process of elimination, you have to reach a certain conclusion, be it pro or negative. Now,
right.
These scientists, these mainstream naysayers, are refusing to acknowledge the facts of the case. That's not very scientific, is it?
No, it isn't. As I said, all they usually do is give list of possibilities, you know, that it wasn't like that. But I think as scientists, then they have to show that that's actually what happened. If they want to say that object probably came down there through a fissure, all right, then they would have to say, okay, well, here's the site. Here we're looking. Here we see a fissure that goes from the surface of the ground way down to these layer of rocks 50 million years old. And, so that's how it happened. Then they can have some scientific reason for dismissing a discovery, but they don't do that. They just raise the possibilities, and that's not scientific.
Well, we're going to have to take another quick break, Michael. And in the background, you may hear my dog barking, but I guess I've got to do something with the soundproofing. At any rate, you are listening to Dark Matters Radio. My guest this evening, Mr. Michael Cremo, will be back in just a moment. And we are back. My guest this evening, Mr. Michael Cremo, the name of the book, Forbidden Archaeology. And you owe it to yourself to go up to Michael's website and take a look. That is www.forbiddenarchaeology.com. And there are a lot of links up there, and also links to Michael's new book, Human Deevolution, which, Michael, in the next hour, I'd like to cover some of that. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so to get back to what we were talking about. Now, in California has been particularly rich in discoveries of what many people call ooparts, or out-of-place objects, ooparts. What are some of the things that have been discovered, for example, in these gold mines?
Some very interesting things have been found. Obsidian spear points, which are very interesting.
Not Clovis points.
Huh?
Are they Clovis?
Well, Clovis is the name of a particular culture that most archaeologists believe existed in the United States.
Maybe I should have said Clovis-like.
Yeah. I would say, but they believe those are less than 10,000 years old, or around 10,000 years old at most. So these obsidian spear points come from layers of rock in the California gold mines that go back to about 50 million years. So I would say, yes, in one sense, you could say they're like the Clovis points in a sense, but not exactly. But they're still the kinds of artifacts that archaeologists say were made only by humans like us. They don't think any kind of ape man could have made these kinds of things.
Okay, now let me ask you another question. And I know that you will be on top of this, but many people hearing this information, perhaps for the first time, are probably going to be fascinated by the idea of human civilization reaching back that far. What about technological objects that have been found in strata thousands or perhaps even millions of years old, or believed to be that old, that simply have no other explanation than an advanced civilization? Are you aware of anything like that?
Well, I'm not aware at the present moment of anything like a computer or a jet airplane, having been found in some very ancient layers of rock. But there are two kinds of evidence about the past. One is what we can find in the layers of rock, but that's very imperfect because a lot of our high-tech sort of stuff really doesn't last very long. For example, I've got a laptop computer sitting on my desk. If you were to bury it in the ground and leave it there for 10,000 or 100,000 or a million years, it wouldn't look very much like the computer I've got on my desk right now. It might look something like a piece of gum squashed on a sidewalk or something.
Right.
But so that's one thing that we have to take into account, that we have to think, well, what's the computer going to look like after 10 million years? And one problem is we don't have very many scientists that are thinking in those terms right now.
Are they afraid to think in those terms?
I think they are, yes.
Because of peer group pressure?
Because of that, and especially that. But as I said, that's one kind of evidence, is what we can find in the layers of the Earth. Another kind of evidence is what we can find left in the written records from some of these ancient civilizations. For example, the
Vedic traditions.
Yeah, the Vedic tradition, the ancient Sanskrit writings tell of spacecraft that could travel from planet to planet. They were called Vimanas. They tell of weapons resembling our modern atomic weapons. They tell of people who were able to calculate time according to the movement of atoms. They told of people who were able to understand the process of embryonic development.
Michael, I hate to do this, but we're at the top of the hour. Let us pick up right here when we come back. Okay?
Yes.